Hello and welcome to the Fried Egg Podcast. My name is Garrett Morrison, and today I'm talking about beekeeping and sustainable golf with Parker Anderson. But first, this episode is brought to you by our friends at Precision Pro Golf. Precision Pro is proud to announce its next major advance in golf technology, and that's the Ace Smart Speaker. This is a portable Bluetooth speaker that can read distances to you. So, the Ace Smart Speaker doesn't just play music. Ace stands for Audio Caddy Experience. And that's really what it is. It's a personal caddy that speaks to you and gives you GPS distances to the front, middle, and back of the green. It also enables you to customize layup zones and get distances for those. Basically, it just allows you not to second guess your distances or second guess the shot you've decided to hit. The Ace Smart Speaker is available for just $149.99 at precisionprogolf.com or amazon.com. It could be a great holiday gift for yourself or for a golfer you know. Swing with confidence, hit more greens with Precision Pro Golf. All right, today we are tackling the widely debated issue of golf's relationship to the environment. My guest is Parker Anderson, who runs a company called Greener Golf. Basically, Greener Golf consults with courses about how to use their resources better and how to be more sustainable overall. And Parker's basic message to those courses and to us is that golf can really be a force for good in the environment. It doesn't have to take away, doesn't have to just kind of keep things status quo. It can actually offer benefits. And one of those benefits involves bees, which Parker and I will definitely talk about. So one more thing before we get into it. In addition to all the other stuff he's done, Parker was a founding member of the band Iration. And he's close friends with the lead singer of that band, Micah Pouchel, who sometimes goes by Poosh. Micah is a big-time golf tragic, well-known in the golf community, and when Parker refers to Poosh at the beginning of our interview, that's who he's talking about. All right, let's do it.
I miss a green, for example. I'm already upset. When I find my ball in the bunker, I'm really upset. And when I find my ball in a
fried egg.
The dreaded fried egg.
Fried egg lie, I'm about ready to run off the golf course.
You grew up in Hawaii?
Yeah.
Or did you just live in Hawaii for a while?
Live in Hawaii for a while. So I was there from like in middle school through high school. And that's kind of how I know Poosh. We kind of grew up together. Some pretty formative years there with Micah and a lot of the guys from the band Iration. We all ended up in Santa Barbara together and kind of started that band up, which was a lot of fun. But Hawaii's a really special spot for me. I was the tournament director for the Hawaii State Junior Golf Association for a couple years, which was a great experience, and got to play a lot of golf in Hawaii, which is always a good treat. But we're actually heading back to Hawaii on January 1st for about 6 weeks, so I'm really excited about that.
Good time of year to do it.
I know, man. It's great.
All right. Well, why don't we dig into the topic? There's many things that I could talk about with you. Like, there's any number of things. You've got a fascinating resume, and you and I have some places in common even that we could probably chat about.
Yeah.
Maybe people wouldn't be as interested in that as the work that you're doing. And that work centers on sustainability and golf. Now, I was going to open with some questions about bees and beekeeping and that idea on golf courses. And we'll get to that for sure. We'll tell that story. But there was an article that came out this week on CNN.com that discussed golf and the environment and ended up getting passed around a lot on the internet. You know, it's an interesting article in the sense that the soundbite from it, the quote that's going to get reprinted and redistributed is the line, "Golf is a dirty sport that's wrecking the planet, but it doesn't have to be." So there's that line in the article, but then the article kind of goes on to discuss golf and the environment, the challenges that it's facing right now, and some of the things that golf architects and golf course superintendents are doing to try to improve things. And so that the article doesn't really follow up on that opening proclamation. But in any case, I guess what I wanted to ask you about was, if somebody didn't know anything about golf and the environment and just read that article, what would you want that person to know?
I mean, it's a common theme, these articles that I've received a lot of them, and it's come in many forms. And when I started reading it with like that tagline that you mentioned of golf is a dirty sport that's wrecking the planet, and I was like, oh, here we go again. You know, this is just another one of these bashing golf kind of articles. And like you said, it does follow up with some examples, some case studies of carbon sequestration, of a lot of positives that are happening in the golf, and some case studies. But a lot of it is from Europe. You know, there's a lot of examples in Europe and Iceland, some really cool stuff happening in Iceland, which is fascinating, surprisingly golf in Iceland. But there's some great examples there. Really, really progressive approach to how golf impacts the environment. And I think that's something that I think the golf industry in general is very, very bad at, of describing the value of golf, especially to non-golfers. And what the challenge that I face a lot is there's a big stigma already, you know, set in our society that golf courses are these wasteful, elitist kind of land, like high fence, high walls, land uses that are inaccessible, that have a history of, you know, closing their gates to many people. And you know, I think some of it is justified, but I think to make generalizations that golf is a dirty sport, or you know, and it's wrecking the planet is kind of an oversimplification. There's 15,000 golf courses about approximately in the U.S., and some are doing really incredible things, and some are having a challenge with what we're facing with this climate catastrophe, and how do we survive that? So we're kind of at a really critical time in the history of our species, but also our industry. And when there's this battle of golfers, you know, kind of seeing this dynamic of golf against the environment, there's kind of this trade-off often where, you know, this has kind of been the norm in our industry, is like, if we have to be more better environmental stewards, then we have to give up something else. And I don't see it that way. I think that's kind of a thing of the past, where sustainability and focusing on environmental initiatives and kind of going beyond sustainability, really, of using golf courses as these regenerative spaces and really provide a lot of value to community, you know, that's a possibility. And there's courses that are kind of are demonstrating that right now. But I think the article really touches on a point that there's a stigma around golf, especially to the non-golfer. You know, most people experience golf from I'm just driving by this fenced off area and I see the irrigation going off and I don't see a single soul out there. So what a waste of land. There's a California Assembly bill that's been proposed recently. It's AB 672, and it's basically a proposal to turn a lot of public golf courses into affordable housing. And, you know, I'm all for affordable housing. I think, you know, we were just talking about the challenge of living in California, and I need some affordable housing. but I think there's better ways to do it. I mean, golf courses often in these urban areas are these last remaining green spaces that provide a significant value to those communities that, like I said, golf, we're not very good at telling that story, especially to non-golfers. And that's a lot of what my work involves, is saying this land use provides this list of ecosystem services to this community. And so, you know, what I'm saying is we need to be able to describe the value of a golf course other than just monetary value. And that's where the difficult work comes into play.
And, you know, part of this is a PR project, in the sense that in that CNN article, there was an easy opportunity for the writer or the writers to say golf is a dirty sport and it's wrecking the planet. And a lot of readers will simply sort of accept that, because that is an established narrative that people are familiar with as sort of oversimplified or even erroneous as it might be. And so part of the project is to combat that, to put a different story out there and give people access to that so they have the ability to say, actually, I don't know if I really believe that line of the article. So that's maybe one thing. But another thing is working with golf courses to improve the environmental services that they provide. Your company, Greener Golf, does a lot of this kind of work. And specifically, one that's really fun to talk about is the beekeeping work that you do. And so maybe we could just start by talking about bees in general, because I think a lot of people sort of avoid bees, right? Their main relationship with bees is please don't sting me, or please get out of my food, or whatever. But tell me about your interest in bees and how that came about.
Yeah, well, my interest in bees goes way back, and so does my experience in golf. And so it's been a great, I'm very grateful for the ability to combine those two passions together. You know, the more I learn about bees, and I continue to learn about bees, even though I've been a beekeeper for about 15 years, is they're really incredible creatures, really selfless. They kind of operate on this for the greater good model. And they just work tirelessly for the greater good of their colony. And I think that's an incredible lesson to be learned right off the bat. And then pollinators, especially honeybees, really are the backbone of our agricultural systems. They provide pollination services for over a third of the food that we eat. So basically every one out of three bites that you're consuming is thanks to a honeybee and its pollination. And so they're very important for our agriculture. The problem is that we're experiencing significant die-offs of colonies every year. So basically, a beekeeper will experience 30 to 50% of their colonies will die every year. So a lot of the work of a beekeeper is really recovering your losses and then trying to re-strengthen your colonies. And so, like I said earlier, we're at a very critical time in the history of our species, of the planet, and bees play a really critical part in that. And how it relates to golf is that bees are on golf courses already. They find water, they're looking for flowers, there's trees that have flowers, there's out of play areas that have flowers. And so they're foraging on golf courses already, they're looking for places to live. But the human honeybee interaction is not always positive on a golf course, as you know. And so, for example, at Goat Hill Park in Oceanside, great little facility that I love to spend time at. We have a great beekeeping program down there. And how it started was I was playing in the Herdsman, which is a two-man best ball two-day event, which is a blast. But we're playing and there's I'm just looking around, there's bees in irrigation boxes, there's a swarm that's hanging from a tree, like right next to the cart path, and there's just bees everywhere, which is, you know, it's great showing that bees are healthy in that area, but I was like this, I talked to John Ashworth, and I said, John, this is a liability, there's, you know, people are getting stung, and let's do something about this. And so he was really supportive, he loves the bees, and so we started. Basically, my work was to capture all of these colonies, relocate them to a safe spot, and create this apiary that's dedicated to the bees, so we can kind of keep the bees in their separate corner and keep the golfers in their separate corners, and everyone's happy. And that's been a really positive story for the bees. Additionally, you know, bees require forage, and you've got this giant irrigated landscape, a golf course. I think the average size of a golf course is about 150 acres, and on average, 60% of that acreage is managed for turf, for play. So you got 40% of that 150 acres is kind of underutilized space. So a lot of my work at Greener Golf is really finding alternative uses, value-added, you know, programming for those spaces, and a lot of it is creating pollinator habitat areas, or depending on the region, you know, stormwater catchment basins, or just adding a lot of features into these underutilized spaces. And so at Goat Hill, we have a huge kind of pollinator habitat area where we're kind of taking more and more areas and dedicating them to growing flowers to support the bees, because they really need a constant forage source. to kind of tie it all in is sustainability and quantifying sustainability is really challenging. There's so many factors. I think at the University of Minnesota, I tried to capture like every measurable factor, and it was close to 1,000 metrics that you'd have to quantify in order to really assess what your sustainability level is. And that's a lot of time. You know, golf course superintendents don't have extra time. And so trying to accomplish that was a big challenge. So what's great about bees, in my opinion, is that bees are what's called an indicator species, meaning if they're healthy and present in a location, it indicates that that area or that ecosystem is healthy. If you have healthy bees, that basically translates to a healthy ecosystem. So it's basically a shorthand way of saying, we have healthy bees here, so therefore this golf course is sustainable. And it's a very easy kind of shorthand way to not have to go through measuring 1,000 different factors, but it's a start, I'd say, a start to demonstrating that a golf course is sustainable by having bees. I call them the Trojan horse of sustainability because there's just so many kind of additional or indirect benefits that having bees really results in.
And when you say a Trojan horse for sustainability in golf, what comes to mind for me is just introducing the concept to golf courses through a beekeeping program that you can use your out-of-play areas in different ways, right? Because there's a number of things that you could do with out-of-play areas, not just beekeeping. So what are some of those additional possibilities that you've thought about or that you've seen?
I mean, bees are one component of it. Pollinators, we really rely on pollinators. But what I like to consider is what we call stacking functions. So how can you get the most value out of a space? So stacking functions would be something like, all right, we've identified this area. We're going to create a stormwater catchment basin or a retention basin where when it rains, it'll fill with water. So we're going to capture water on site. But also those plants there, we're going to grow some plants that are also beneficial to pollinators. Maybe there's some plants there that are harvestable as a form of agriculture. So we have some additional value there of creating some food for humans. And those spaces then have a lot more value than just kind of keeping it out of sight, out of mind, and just letting it do its thing. There's a little bit more, I'd say, grunt work on the front end to start those programs and initiatives. But once they get rolling and really the design is key of how do you design this space so that it kind of perpetuates itself, that you don't have to spend a lot of time on it, but it also provides all these values. So those types of considerations are what kind of goes through that process.
Yeah, I mean, I've noticed that a lot of golf courses put maintenance effort into their out of play areas, and so just not really having to do that as much anymore would potentially free some things up. But you know, you're describing the beekeeping program at Goat Hill Park. Goat Hill Park, as you alluded to, is a unique place with a wonderful culture, headed up by John Ashworth, who currently runs the Linksoul brand, but is also familiar to golfers through the Ashworth brand, which came before that. And they, you know, there was a community effort to save that golf course. And ever since then, it's been this place of kind of experimentation. And so you could argue that Goat Hill Park is uniquely well situated to accept an idea like a beekeeping program. Like if I were to guess any American golf course that would be most receptive to an idea like this, I would probably say Goat Hill Park,
yeah.
Right? That would be my guess, which is a wonderful thing for Goat Hill Park, really. But at other kinds of golf courses, you're going to run into a little more trouble in getting them to adopt things like this. And so how do you negotiate that diplomacy?
Good question. So there's obviously a variety in the character of clubs. Goat Hill, as we recognize, is a unique case. But I've worked with the University of Michigan golf courses. Both have strong beekeeping programs. The Valley Club of Montecito has a really strong beekeeping program. And the primary cause of that, or the start of that, was basically to mitigate the relationship and kind of coordinate the relationship between humans and honeybees, golfers and honeybees, because a lot of these golf courses are these like bee banks where there's bees there. There's a lot of bees on these properties. How can you safely navigate and manage that relationship where you don't want a swarm or a colony to move in right next to a tee box? So how do you safely capture or kind of relocate these colonies to a space that you can really be an environmental steward, a steward of these colonies, and really support the local honeybee population, but also provide safety for your membership? The superintendent at the Valley Club, Kevin O'Connor, is really supportive of the program. He loves the bees and is always asking questions about them. And but I think the membership, you know, the membership really is supportive of it as well. And I think a lot of the members recognize that the honeybees are a valuable part of our ecosystem and we need to support them.
Yeah.
Another benefit though is which is a challenge for me sometimes is keeping up with the demand for honey. I mean, everyone is always asking when is the honey harvest, and it's, you know, I'm a beekeeper primarily for the benefit of the bees. I'm trying to strengthen and support honeybee populations and other pollinators, and so I'm not trying to push them too hard to capture a lot of honey. But occasionally they'll have a surplus, and I'll be able to get some, and hopefully that satisfies the demand a little bit. But it's
do you have jars that you hand out and stuff?
Yeah, I mean, as part of my contracts with these clients is any honey surplus that is gathered is belongs to the club. And so there was a harvest at Goat Hill, and I just gave, you know, 30 jars to John, and he gave them out to his staff. To each member of his staff got a little 3-ounce jar with a Goat Hill honey on it, and it had a QR code on the top that links to my website that has a lot of information of why bees are important. And he gave that out as a gift to celebrate the 7th anniversary of Goat Hill. And I think that little gift really connected a lot of the employees to the golf course, and they recognized the value of the beekeeping program. And really they recognize that Goat Hill is a benefit to the ecosystem. We're not swimming in honey. It's not like a big honey production operation or anything. I'm just trying to keep the bees healthy and keep golfers healthy as well.
So, yeah. And it's a side benefit.
Yeah.
Probably exactly. Pretty delicious too. I mean,
it's like, amazing.
Like truly organic honey is another animal, so to speak, from the stuff you get at the grocery store.
Yeah. The locally sourced honey, it's seasonal. So it'll taste different during different times of the year. And it's really thought to be really good for allergies, and because it has the local pollen in it that's processed by the bees a little bit. So
yeah,
it's a hot commodity.
That's cool.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little more generally about sustainability and how you define it. You have a working definition of sustainability in golf. Could you tell me about that, just so we can kind of root ourselves in what we're talking about when we say sustainability? Because it's such a buzzword now, but it does actually mean something.
That's a challenge in and of itself is defining sustainability. So the United Nations has a definition. It's meeting the needs of the present without compromising the ability of future generations to meet their own needs. And I think that's reasonable. I prefer a few alternatives. One is basically the kind of the outdoor motto of leave it better than you found it. So basically, as it applies to a golfer, is fix two ball marks when you make one. You know, the golf course is better off because of it. But really, the definition and the practice that I really identify with is basically the First Nations approach of reciprocity. So basically, whatever you give, you know, we're given air, water, nourishment from the earth, and we're connected to the earth. And I think that's something that we're constantly, unfortunately, getting farther and farther away from is our connection to the earth. And I think golf is a great way to reestablish some of those connections with our kinship with the environment. So the idea of reciprocity of, you know, we're given a great gift to be out in these outdoors, and how can we support these ecosystems? We're not taking from these ecosystems, or we're not separate from them. we're reuniting with the ecosystem through golf and through the management of this course. And that really provides a lot of value, not just to the individual, provides a lot of value to the individual golfer, you know, being outdoors and engaging with nature, the mental health aspects of it. But the non-golfer, the person that is just close to that space, really gets a lot of value from that golf course as well. And so that's something that I really consider, like you mentioned, defining sustainability is a challenge in and of itself. And we have a hard time defining it, and then we have a hard time quantifying it. But I think golf courses now are trying to be more sustainable. And I think that word more, it needs to go. I mean, we're trying to be, I see a future where we're beyond sustainable, where we're really regenerating these ecosystems and supporting ecosystems rather than kind of these net zero approaches. We're at a point where I think golf courses can really be a regenerative and beyond sustainable land use.
Now, so what are some of the specific ways in which golf courses can do this? So we talked about pollinator habitats. What are some other ecosystem services or ways in which golf courses can have a regenerative effect as opposed to taking away something or just keeping it kind of level?
Yeah. And so there's a whole list of sustainability metrics and initiatives and things that a golf course can engage in. I think that changes based on the region. For example, in California, water quantity is like the biggest issue. So using reclaimed water or using less water, having very firm and fast conditions, which are fun. You know, it's a little browner maybe, but you know, I think that's something that golfers need to accept and understand. So California water quantity is an issue, whereas in the Midwest, water quality is a big issue. So, you know, with regards to sustainability, there's economic sustainability, there's the environmental sustainability, kind of community engagement, but also golfer experience is a big part of sustainability. You know, how do you enhance the golfer experience? I think education and integrating a lot of educational opportunities on the golf courses and really highlighting what a golf course is rather than just a recreational space to golfers is a value. But to kind of go back to your question, I kind of went on a tangent there, but basically we're looking at air quality, carbon sequestration. We're looking at soil health. Carbon sequestration of soils is a tremendous opportunity there. Having healthy soils will retain a lot of carbon. If you have healthy soils, then you have healthy turf, and you can use less water and less chemicals. And so there's a lot, they're all connected in ways, but I think looking at each golf course as a unique land use is necessary in order to figure out which sustainability initiatives are best there. And I think the part of sustainability that is often overlooked, and you know, we're looking at environmental issues all the time, but there's things about like accessibility and environmental justice of these land uses. How do we get more people on them? How do we get a population of golfers that's representative of the population of these communities? And how do we use golf as a tool to promote positive social change and community engagement and a positive future? Those are big issues. There's, you know, agriculture is a huge one. I spent some time as the campus farm manager at the University of Michigan, and I just love gardening and farming and growing my own food. And, you know, bees are a big part of that. And, you know, golf courses are these giant irrigated spaces. So why don't we like plant some veggies around and really utilize those spaces as these kind of local food movements are really starting to take hold. So there's a whole list of opportunities there. And I think, like I said, every golf course has a unique ecosystem and a unique community that it's a part of. And so it kind of requires a very deep dive into what is existing here. You know, we talk a lot about the future, but we really don't know where we stand. So I think really doing a lot of data collection and understanding where the golf course is, how much water it uses, and just really doing a baseline assessment of this is where we are now. That gives you a really strong position to make a change and then measure that change. And then that measurement of change, you know, that positive change really then results in a really powerful story of this value of this golf course.
And this is what you call the Greener Golf Index, right? That your way of measuring how sustainable a golf course is, or what it adds as opposed to what it takes away.
Yeah. So the Greener Golf Index, as you mentioned, is an attempt at a holistic measurement of the sustainability of a golf course. I say attempt just because I mentioned there's over 1,000 different measurable factors that go into the management of a course. And so it captures information from the economics, the environment, the community, and the golfer experience. And so what we're trying to do is maximize the impact of those. And so, you know, finding the key factors of each of those kind of silos kind of goes into this algorithm where the concept is that you have a score that you can then have a baseline assessment and say, okay, here's where we stand now. We're going to do these interventions. Now we're going to measure again. And then we have that delta that we can then, you know, use as a kind of a positive story of a change and the impact. Really measuring the impact is what this tool is designed to do.
Would this measurement sometimes discover things that are not so great about what a golf course is doing?
Yeah, and that's a great question, because there's a belief by some in the industry that if you don't measure it, it doesn't exist, right? If you start measuring something, then we're liable for whatever that issue is. And so with regard to like products and different chemicals and so forth used, there's a thing called the environmental impact quotient, which was developed by Cornell University. Shout out to Dr. Frank Rossi out there. He's doing some amazing work with golf. They developed this database of any product or chemical you would use for a golf course, and it gives you a score similar to the Greener Golf Index, and then you can find alternatives for that product that are better for the bees, better for the watershed, and so forth. But that is a big challenge, is starting that journey of collecting data. So there's a lot of hesitancy, I would say, by some golf course operators to capture some of that data, because they see that it could potentially result in some sort of liability down the road.
So let's get specific about what this could look like, what this kind of work could look like at a particular course. You did your master's thesis work at the University of Michigan Golf Courses, one of which is the U of M golf course, which is an Alistair McKenzie design that actually Andy and I talked about in our last episode of the podcast. It's a really cool golf course. And then there's Radrick Farms, which is a Pete Dye course from the mid-60s, I believe. It's sort of early in his career, one of his early projects. You did a ton of work at these golf courses as you were researching your thesis, and in fact did some projects at these courses. So could you tell me about those and you know, what kind of specific measures you took to increase the sustainability of them?
Yeah, both great golf courses. I recognized in my golf career, I was a club pro for a while. I was a junior golf tournament director for a while, and really just kind of tried a lot of wore many hats in the industry.
Yeah. Well, you're one of those rare people who is part of the PGA as well as the GCSAA. So the main professionals association, as well as the main, greenkeepers association.
Exactly. So. There's not a lot of overlap, and I'm happy to be involved with both organizations. And I recognized in my career that, you know, the golf has this great opportunity to be a better steward of the environment. So I chose to go to grad school to really focus on, you know, exploring that and really studying that and finding that opportunity. And I chose University of Michigan because it has a strong landscape architecture program, which Mike DeVries went through. He's a Michigan guy. And I also got a, so I got a master's of landscape architecture there, but also a master of science in sustainable systems. So it was one of those programs that you're able to have a very strong science background, but also really focus on kind of the art and design and get deep into the landscape side of things. So that was a really valuable experience. And I went specifically to focus on golf. And going to an environmental school focusing on golf was an eye-opener. I mean, I got a lot of confrontation early, and luckily I was able to have a lot of great conversations with some incredible people, really smart people that are focusing on different aspects of sustainability and environmental justice and so forth, and have some difficult conversations. And I'm grateful to have turned some perceptions to the more positive side of golf. But to focus on the University of Michigan golf course, which is also known as the Blue Course, an Alistair McKenzie course, it's an amazing track. And I remember a great memory is Saturday, there was a big Michigan football game. And then Sunday they had the tailgating everywhere on the golf course. And then Sunday was they have a student club championship. And so like it was right after the tailgating. And so, you know, you hit a ball out of play and you're like, you know, there's beer cans or something like that. It's incredible how good of a job they do at going from tailgate to playability. I don't know how they do it, but it's pretty incredible. And the course is in really good shape. But a really historically important and a really great design, and it's accessible to students. Really fantastic piece of property, and it's right next to the big house, which is a lot of fun. And then Radrick Farms is like you said, a Pete Dye course, and it was Pete and Alice Dye's first 18-hole design, but it wasn't built until after they finished a few other courses. But it's part of this big property that was donated to the university by Frederick Mathai, and they started the botanical gardens there. There's a big forest there. Luckily for me, they have this caretaker program there where if you're a graduate student in, back then it was called the School of Natural Resources and Environment, now it's the School of Environment and Sustainability, getting that buzzword in there, you know, rebranded. But if you're a student at this school, there's opportunities for free housing in exchange for being a caretaker of this property. And so I worked 10 hours a week on the golf course, either mowing greens or, you know, doing whatever. And I lived on property in this old farmhouse, and it was an incredible 4 years there. And part of my master's project was to design a little par three course called the Gateway Course. Kind of the gateway to sustainability. It's also at the gateway of Radrick Farms. And, you know, we're still in discussions of potentially building that, which is a lot of fun. And that property is just a really special place to me. And it's a great resource for the university. Mm-hmm.
The farmhouse that you were living in, was that meant for habitation?
at one point it was, yeah. I mean, it was a little run down, but you know, it had a fireplace at one point that they then decided it wasn't a good idea to let graduate students just have fires in an old building. So, you know, that was
did graduate students typically live there? Was that like a place that often you would find graduate students through time?
Well, so originally it was the house of the general manager, and then it was kind of vacated for a long period of time. And then this is a pretty lucky for me is the year that I started at Michigan, they started a caretaker program there. So I was one of the first caretakers there, but they've continued that program since I've been there. So graduate students still live there, and I've been there to visit a few times, and it's still standing, and it's a beautiful old, you know, kind of white farmhouse, but it's got its, you know, it's aged a little bit, but the price is right. You know, it's 10 hours of greens mowing a week is worth it.
Yeah. All right. So the Gateway Course, what projects would be part of that course that would help in the drive toward sustainability, do you think, if that course were built?
Yeah. So having a little kind of laboratory for golf is, if you can imagine, would be a great benefit to a golf course, because you can really explore and experiment with different turf species, different irrigation strategies, different nutrient cycles, and so forth. And you can experiment on this little course before you put it out on the big course. And so also there's, you know, so that's one component of it. Also there's the challenge of getting new players into the game. So signing up for a tee time and playing 18 holes is a very intimidating thing for a new golfer. And so if you had a space where you could, you know, kind of learn the ropes a little bit and figure out how to play, what's the flow of a round, even if it's on a short little 9-hole par 3 course, you know, you kind of get the feel of playing a round of golf, and then you can take the next step. So it's a gateway to golf as well as sustainability. And just having a place for fun. You know how popular, you guys were just up at Bandon Dunes, right? And I don't know if you play the Preserve or not. That
we didn't play the Preserve, and people have been giving us a hard time, rightfully so, that we didn't. But I have played the Preserve. I have been out there and played for sure.
Well, you know that's the often the highlight of people's trips is playing the Preserve, because it's unique and it's like a more of a, it cultivates this level of play, like the playground up Goat Hill. It's a short little 3-hole course. It's for kids. And or the Punch Bowl at Bandon Dunes as well. I've seen I have this memory of these older guys on a Bandon trip just laughing like little boys on the Punch Bowl and running around and just having a blast. And and those different models of golf, I think, really enhance, you know, the big golf, like the 18-hole rounds and so forth. So having a little space to experiment and show to people and get new people involved and try new things and have bees and grow some food and have a lot of laughs, just make it a fun experience. I think having more spaces like that is really valuable for the game.
Yeah. And I've thought of short courses often as being spaces of experimentation for architecture too, because at courses like the Preserve or the Sandbox at Sand Valley, architects can try more daring ideas than they could on a full 18-hole course, because for whatever reason, when golfers play a short course, they are primed to accept weird stuff. You know, it's okay if there's like a super crazy green or if there's an 80-yard hole that's completely blind. Whereas if they saw that on a big course, they might say, oh, that's gimmicky. Oh, that doesn't have any place here. On a short course, they're more like, oh, this is fun. And so they're in more of a kind of accepting frame of mind. And I guess the same could be true of maintenance.
Yeah, absolutely. Having a place to test things out and play around with architecture, with management, and with just getting people involved in golf is of great value for a space like Roderick Farms. And being affiliated with the university too, really pride, you know, Michigan really prides itself on being the leaders and best in all these activities, and having a place where you can really use that space to get people involved in golf and benefit the community. It's just kind of a win-win-win situation there. And I hope we move forward with it sometime soon.
Thank you so much for talking to me, Parker, and good luck with your ventures. This episode was edited by Meg Atkins. Thank you, Meg. And if you want to learn more about Parker Anderson's work and his company, Greener Golf, you can go to greener.golf. Thanks for listening.